Welcome to Foundations of Emo, hosted by Claire and Danny. Each episode, we take one of our favourite bands and dive deep into their history and origins, reminiscing on our own emo roots along the way.
Woohoo!
I love who don't need script for that.
I know. I was only thinking about that when I was on the bus the other day. I was like, remember when we used to have to get up the script every time to say that?
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
just like...
And still, each episode when we do it, we say the same thing, which is like, woohoo!
We did it. We are professional podcast hosts. We are, because our podcast is now available on YouTube.
Yes.
Which makes it sound like we're making videos, but we're not. We still only just make short little videos for Instagram and TikTok. But you can listen to it on YouTube.
Do people do that?
I didn't know that was a thing, but let's hope it is.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Go. So if you're listening from YouTube, hello.
Hi, guys.
How are you? Any news?
Any news? I'm just so grateful to be alive today.
Yeah.
After my hangover saga yesterday.
Do you want to divulge that story?
I mean, I can. So I was very hungover.
Claire can't drink,
I can't drink.
So this and does not mean she drank an extortionate amount.
No, and I also don't really drink a lot, really, ever. So I didn't have that much on Friday, and I just went for a cash dinner, was home, I'd say in bed by 12 o'clock, and then I woke up at 4:30 with the worst hangover I'm not going to say I've ever had, but it was up there. You know, where you're just like so uncomfortable, and no matter what way you turn or what way you lie, like your head hurts, your stomach hurts. You're like, do I want to cry? Do I want to puke? Do I want to do other things in the toilet? Like, I just don't know. So then that was all well and good. Tried to make myself sick a few times. Didn't really work. So then I had to go into work for 4 hours. So I had to be in work at 9. When I got in, I was like, this is grand, I can do this. 2 hours later, I was like, this is not grand, I can't do this. So I got a Lucozade to try and, you know, fix myself. Kind of worked for 10 minutes, then I started feeling awful, left work, got into my car. It's a 6 minute drive from where I work to my apartment, and when we're at the lights, do you know that like coughing feeling you have when you need to get sick and you're like I was like, oh no, because when you stopped at the lights, there was like someone in the lane beside me. I was like, no, please don't look at me, I can't get sick. So I didn't get sick, but then as soon as I drove off, I puked. And bear in mind, I just got my car cleaned last week on the Tuesday, so I was like, I cannot get vomit on my newly cleaned car. So instead of just, well, I don't know, I didn't know where to puke, so I just puked into my lap.
Four times.
So it's just like, bleh, bleh.
Beautiful.
Like, if anyone was driving past and saw me, because I just didn't know what else to do, so I was just sitting there with like this perfect puddle of vomit in my lap. Then I had to pull into my apartment. I was like, how am I gonna get out getting this on my car? So I like held my thighs together, good job I have big thighs, and like swung them around out of the car and stood up, and I'm all like splashed on the ground, and I managed to get absolutely none in my car, which is so impressive.
It's impressive.
And then I went to bed for 5 hours and woke up at 6 o'clock. Was a shell of my former self. So today I'm just so grateful that I'm alive and breathing and not puking into my own lap.
We can all be thankful for that today, hopefully.
Just thank God Danny wasn't there. Danny hates vomit. What would you do?
I would have got out of the moving
car. You would.
Like, I would have just like jumped out and just rolled on the street.
Like, if I was driving you somewhere and I just started puking into myself. Like,
yeah, I'd be gone. Like, gone. Absolutely not.
Anyway, if anyone else has a hangover story worse than that, please tell me so I feel better about myself as a 34-year-old woman. Thank you.
That's pretty bad. I think that's, yeah, I don't think I've got one that bad.
No, it's up there. It's one of the most low points of my life, to be honest. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, how was your weekend?
My weekend was fine. It was Indy's birthday, so I spent it in like a kids' play centre. It was very loud.
I think
it was
I'd
very
rather
intense. Yeah, I don't know if your story was better than mine. But we are going to Disneyland Paris on Wednesday, so that's
Woo-hoo!
Exciting. We're going to do 3 days in Disney and 1 day in Paris.
I'm excited. Exciting, yeah. Yeah, it'd be so cute.
Yeah.
She's a spooky kid.
She is a spooky kid. One of her best friends got her two of those little teddy bear teddies. They're like really small and they're different kinds of monsters. And when she opened them, she looked at me and she goes, he knows I'm a spooky girl. I just thought that was the cutest thing ever. I'm doing something right. I'm raising her right.
Yeah, she's a good kid.
Shall we get started?
Yes, I'm excited to hear about all these bands because I don't know anything about them. I know bits and bobs about her, but nothing like solid.
Yeah, this is kind of a Brody Dahl episode because she's been in several bands. So we're kind of spanning across everything, but it's all just Brody.
Yeah, let's go for it.
So Brodie Dahl was born Bree Joanna Alice Robinson in Melbourne, Australia on the 1st of January 1979. Her grandfather was Giacomo Costa, an Italian-Australian professional wrestler, best known by his ring name Al Costello, the creator and original member of the tag team The Fabulous Kangaroos. Which is just amazing.
I didn't know she was Australian.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or maybe I did know that deep down somewhere.
Yeah, I think a lot of people presume she's American.
Yeah.
But she's lived there for a long time, as we're about to hear. So as a kid, she was intrigued by Cyndi Lauper and the Beatles, and at the age of 12, she discovered bands such as Nirvana and cited Courtney Love and her band Hole, as well as other female-led punk groups such as Babes in Toyland and Bikini Kill, as her early influences. Her musical career began at 13 years old when she started learning guitar. Her father was violent, and later she suffered sexual abuse. I don't know if that was by her father or by someone else.
Sorry, we're not even a paragraph in here.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of, it's grim. It's one of my episodes, so obviously dark. But I read a couple of interviews and like sexual abuse is noted and it never says by her father.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I don't, I'm just saying, clear the air there. I don't know who did it. And then she spent a lot of her teenage years at court cases regarding this. She trained to be an Olympic swimmer as a teenager and was expelled from two Catholic high schools before dropping out altogether. She then began self-harming and self-medicating with heroin. And there's an interview with her where she said, I was never a junkie. I was never shoeless and selling my mom's cars to a gypsy. Sorry. I just experimented like everyone else. Which is, you know, have we all experimented with heroin?
I think my version of experimenting was like mixing a Blue Wicked with a Smirnoff Ice or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The way it's, she says tells that story is just like very normal. I don't know if it is though.
What age was she when she started doing heroin?
I didn't find anything that said, but like we're talking 15, 16, I think. Like,
where would she even get teenager. Heroin at that age?
I don't know. It sounds like she's a little troubled kid. Mm-hmm. And then after time living in a women's shelter, she formed an all-girl punk band called Sourpuss. I couldn't find much on them. I think it was just like a local band kind of thing.
Great name.
So in 1995, a few days before her 17th birthday, Sourpuss played a set at Australia's Somersault Festival. This is where she met 30-year-old Tim Armstrong, frontman of the punk band Rancid. The two pursued a relationship and were engaged in 1997, shortly after she turned 18.
I did know this, yeah.
It's just red flag city.
Well, I just always find it like as a, because when you get older, right, that age gap obviously isn't a big deal. But like, why is a 30-year-old man looking at a 17-year-old?
Yeah, it was like, the day before her 17th birthday, like she was actually 16 and he was 30 and he was like, yes,
no.
You know, that's, it's not good.
No.
So she moved to Los Angeles then to be with him. However, the marriage was fraught with Brodie saying, I used my band to get away from my husband. So there's also not a lot of information. I tried to go on a deep dive to find out more. And about their actual relationship, there's not like a whole lot of information. In late 1998, Brodie met bassist Kim Chi and they bonded over their love of playing punk rock. They recruited guitarist Rose Casper Mazzola and drummer Matt Young and started a band called The Distillers.
Woo.
In 2000, they released their debut self-titled album through Hellcat, an indie label based in LA. It's an offshoot of Epitaph. Started as a partnership between Brett Gurwitz of Bad Religion, the owner of Epitaph, and Tim Armstrong of Rancid. So it's kind of like, it's not Tim's label, but like he co-owns
it. Yeah, yeah.
So not only does he own her through marriage.
He also owns
not that
her.
I think that that's what marriage is, but but yeah, now he's like kind of owning her music. So the album was produced by Thomas Johnson, who has produced for Rancid, The Specials, Jane's Addiction, and several of those Punkorama compilations. Do you remember them?
Do I?
I don't know where I remember them from. They were like Punkorama 1, Punkorama 2.
Oh, yeah, I probably would.
They were just compilations of all punk songs.
Do you remember I tried to be a punk for a while?
I always think of you as like more punk than me.
Yeah, because I think I was like, I really wanted to like be a punk. As in, I just wanted to be like, fuck the government and all that kind of thing.
I mean,
so,
I
like,
still say that.
I mean, I do as well, but punk? I think like I really tried to get into like Anti-Flag, Rancid. I remember my dad gave me a Ramones CD and I listened to it and I was like, I just can't like this. Like, I'm trying so hard, but you just can't listen to like that much of it, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. Because I remember you being into Anti-Flag and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's a bit too punk for me.
Do you remember I loved Men with Mohawks? Oh, yeah. Didn't work out for me, though.
That was a thing. So by the end of the year, Kim had left the band already to join the band Original Sinners, and Matt left to join that band shortly after as well. In January 2002, with Andy Outbreak on drums and Ryan Sin on bass and vocals, the Distillers released their second studio album, Sing Sing Death House, through Hellcat. So have you gone back and listened to these?
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts?
I love them, but I loved them at the time when I was into my punk phase.
Mm.
I just really liked how the way she sings is like so lazy or something. When she's like, she just like doesn't even bother like pronouncing her words or something. I just thought she was cool. Like,
I remember my first time ever hearing The Distillers, I had a CD or a DVD that came with like Kerrang or something like that. Yeah. And Drain the Blood was on it. And I know I just turned it on and she started singing and I was like, what the fuck is this? And how do I become this cool? Because I was like, she's the coolest person I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah. Is that the video where the start of it is just her walking, like her hips?
Yeah.
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 It's like, what a sexy bitch. I was trying to like model myself on her, guys. Like, I don't know if it's worked out.
But. Well, the thing is that I, shortly after that, cut my hair really short, but not because of her. I did it because I wanted to spike it up in that, like, emo way.
Yeah.
Remember those days?
I remember that well, yeah.
But then people would be like, oh, you're trying to be Brody Dahl, or you're trying to look like Brody Dahl. And then people would be like, you do look like her. And I was like, no, wait, I don't. I just have short black hair. I mean, I wish, but, like, I don't. But, you know, I used to get that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just trying to be her. I was like, no, I'm trying to be an emo.
Different genre, guys.
But, like, still would totally be her.
Yeah, yeah. We'll accept it.
So I never really listened to the first album before this.
I listened to it when, because I bought this one, what is it, Sing Sing Death House. And then I went back and bought the other one and I was like, don't really like it as much.
Yeah, the first one I wasn't mad about. Sing Sing Death House has a couple of tracks on it.
Yeah.
And then Corifying is, like, the best ever. So this album was recorded in a week and the band self-produced it in a rush as they were to have the album completed within 2 weeks, according to the label.
Wow.
So their engineer disappeared during recording, which left them stuck for time to meet the deadlines. Following its completion, Epitaph delayed its release by 9 months.
Wait, hang on. Did they ever find him again?
I don't know.
I'm like, true crime podcast. Like, where did they go?
But yeah, Epitaph were like, you need to have this one in 2 weeks, and then just didn't release it for nine months.
No, that's so frustrating.
So annoying.
That is so annoying.
And then the lyrics on this album are more direct than on the first one. This came about due to criticism of the album's nonsensical lyrics in a review written by The Village Voice, which greatly affected Brody. Brody called the review scathing and hilarious and life-altering, but apparently was grateful for the review's honesty. So that was about, like, the first album. So Andrew Bregman from AllMusic noted that Sing Sing Death House is a story with an uncharacteristic ending that punks born of squalor can rise up and create music as impassioned and relatively positive as this, also calling it authentic. Brody and drummer Andy are credited for the album artwork.
Oh.
You know, with the guys
all
green with the little guys with their eyes covered or whatever.
I do kind of, not that nonsensical, but I remember because of the way she sings, it's hard to know what she's saying anyway. Then I remember like seeing the lyrics of some songs and being like, what? That's what she's saying?
But even today I was listening to Corifying when I was in the car and I was singing along to some of the songs and I was like, what I'm singing are not actual words. Like I was like, this, and I'm like, I don't know what the actual words are. I just know what sounds to make. So I don't know if she ever really got better after that to do with like enunciating. So in 2001, Brody also made a cameo in Newfound Glory's music video, My Friends Over You, with her then husband, Tim Armstrong, as well as Travis Barker and Rob Aston from The Transplants.
Oh, I didn't know that, did I? I don't think I did.
So you've never
She's
been
still
into
married to him by this stage?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
By summer 2002, The Distillers were composed of Brody Dahl, bassist Ryan Sinn, and new drummer Andy Granelli. They planned some joint American shows with No Doubt and Garbage for later that autumn.
Oh, what a show. What
yeah,
a
I know. Then guitarist / vocalist Tony Bradley joined the band in time to record their third studio album and major label debut, Corifying. At this time, Brody was the only original member of the band left. The album was released in October 2003 by Sire Records, an American label owned by the Warner Music Group.
Mm.
The label represented bands such as, this is wild, like so many bands, because I've never heard of Sire Records before. But they represented bands such as Against Me, Armor for Sleep, Taken Back Sunday, My Chemical Romance, Blondie, The Cure, The Smiths, and The Veronicas.
Never heard of them, though.
I was like, any of those bands? Like, I only chose, like, a couple there. So, obviously, I chose ones that we've done episodes on before. But I also chose, like, Blondie and The Smiths, like, massive fans. Which is wild.
I like that.
Corifying was produced by Gil Norton, an English producer known for working with alt-rock bands such as Pixies, Dashboard Confessional, Jimmy Eat World, Busted, Funeral for a Friend, Sum 41, AFI, Yumi 86, and Bayside. So, he's been around. Has he come up before? Because I don't really know his name.
He sounds familiar now. Did I not mention him in now for Sum 41?
I hope so.
I think I might have.
The album peaked at number 97 in the US and 46 in the UK. However, it was rated the 7th best album of 2003 by Kerrang.
Hmm.
The album received acclaim and comparisons to Hole, with Brody often compared to Courtney Love and later to PJ Harvey. Three singles were released from the album, Drain the Blood, The Hunger, and Beat Your Heart Out. And some songs from the album were used in video games, such as Gran Turismo 4, Rock Band, Tony Hawk's Underground 2, and Spider-Man 2. The name of the band and album is also graffitied on a wall in the console version of Spider-Man 2.
That's cool.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Then I was like, I want to play that game. I don't really, but I just want to see it in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
So Brody and her husband went through a bitter divorce in 2003 when Tim saw a picture of Brody kissing Queens of the Stone Age frontman Josh Homme in an issue of Rolling Stone magazine.
Wait, what? Did they not?
What? What's your question?
I'm like, is that where he saw it?
He saw it in a magazine, apparently. He saw a picture of them kissing.
Did they know they were going to be in the magazine kissing?
I don't know.
Hmm.
So Brody said that Tim was very controlling of her and that it took her 3 years to leave him. When she finally did, Tim and his friends criticised Brody in the press, and she claims he threatened the male members of the Distillers and blacklisted anyone associated with them. She said, "We lost every fucking body. Me and my guys were left there standing alone, holding each other." The story pushed by Tim's camp was that she used him, but she argues that she always paid her own way. She said, "I moved to America with money I got from the government of Australia for being sexually abused. I'd gone through a couple of court cases when I was 14, 15 years old, and I'd been compensated for one of them. When I turned 18, I got that money and got the fuck out of there." However, when she did move to LA, she said Tim controlled her career, dictating who she worked with and which label she was signed to. After her divorce, Brody reverted to using the surname of her favourite actress, Beatrice Dahl. Because Brody Dahl's not her name.
Oh. Was she not Brody Dahl, though, while she was this?
I think she was Brody Armstrong. I think she had his surname. So then she just chose Dahl and started using that instead.
Brody Dahl sounds way better.
So that same year, in 2003, Brody and Josh began dating. This is Josh Homme, who she was caught kissing. And they would go on to get married in 2005. Regarding their relationship, Josh said, I think this is actually pretty cool. He said, "She can spit 30 feet and punch like a guy. She's my punk rock dream girl. I always thought if I could go out with a chick with a mohawk who also read philosophy, I'd be winning. Brody is the real deal. She does everything the boys can do and a whole slew of things no one ever could. I met Brody when she was 17 and I was 23. It was her first day in the US after relocating from Melbourne, and I was playing guitar in the Screaming Trees. She came up to me backstage and asked if I was in Caius. We talked for an hour and a half and I never forgot her. I didn't like her ex, Tim Armstrong, so I lied and said I made out with her in the hope that he would find out." I look at me just telling like a magazine this. "I didn't see her again until 7 years later. Our bands played the big day out in Australia in 2003. I was with someone in a casual way, but I had my eye out for Brody and I saw her walking past. I pretended I didn't see her and tried to be cool. And from that moment we clicked and it was on. We've been together ever since. I never thought I would get married, but I found someone I couldn't live without."
It's very specific criteria. Someone with a mohawk who reads philosophy.
I feel like there's a lot of guys who with mohawks who read philosophy to try and like...
That's true, actually.
Come across as deep.
Yeah.
You just wanted the female version of that. Fun fact, in a February 2003 episode of Gilmore Girls, Jess surprises Rory with last-minute tickets to a Distillers concert.
That is random.
Couldn't see Rory Gilmore
no.
at a Distillers concert.
No.
But I think she was like feminist, so it kind of makes sense.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, still. She'd absolutely get the shit kicked out of a Distillers concert. In early 2005, drummer Andy Granelli left the Distillers, moving on to play with Darker My Love. And by the summer, bassist Ryan Sinn had also left. He later joined Angels and Airwaves.
Oh, do you remember them?
Remember them! I always think of that first single that they released, and they had that video.
Yeah, I'm like...
I can't even remember what was in, what
like
they were doing.
It was like a spaceship or something.
There was a spaceship, but there was like loads of people in it, and they were all emos. And I remember watching that video and being like, I'm in love with every man in this video, and I want to be every woman in this
what
video.
What was that song?
I have no idea.
Gonna annoy me. Which one was it again that joined that one? The main fella, the meow meow guy, wasn't it?
Tom DeLonge?
Yeah.
Rumours of the Distillers breaking up circulated, but Brody and guitarist Tony Bradley denied them, saying they were taking a hiatus.
Hmm.
In early 2006, Brody gave birth to her first child, a daughter named Camille Harley Joan Homme, with her husband, Josh Homme. I've included her full name because I'm like, Harley is
Harley,
in like Harley
yeah,
Davidson
yeah.
And then Joan is like, is that Joan Jett?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
I probably could have Googled and
what's
try and find out.
Like the...
I don't know.
The restaurant.
Yeah. She really likes Thai food. By the end of the year, Brody and Tony announced the disbandment of the Distillers. Brody later went on to say that all of the band members were addicted to methamphetamine, which is crystal meth, which is what caused the band to implode.
Including her?
Mm-hmm.
While she gave birth?
No. So... I'm just going to say that in a minute. I'll come to it. So Josh was away on tour and Brody was staying with her mother-in-law when she discovered that she was pregnant with her first child. She said she'd given up meth 2 months previously, but it was a pregnancy which strengthened her resolve. She said she gave up everything, alcohol, cigarettes and coffee. Which I suppose is what you're meant to do, but like if you're on meth, it's kind of good that you're giving up even the lighter things like alcohol and coffee. I was thinking as well, I was like, she's staying with her mother-in-law. And when I first started reading the story, I was like, and she was on meth. But then turned out she'd given it up.
She just sounds terrible, but like she looks like she'd be on meth. You know what I mean?
That's pretty terrible. In 2007, Brody and Tony began to work on another band called Spinnerette with Alan Johannes from the band Eleven. So I need to preface this by saying, I started reading about Alan Johannes and I thought that his name was Elaine and I thought he was a girl. So when I was writing this the whole time, I was like, Elaine Johannes. And I was like picturing these two girls having like a little friendship and starting a band. And I was like, I was so into it. And I was actually having a conversation with my boyfriend and I was telling him the story that I'm about to tell in a minute. And I was like, and then there was this girl called Elaine Johannes. And I was like saying it so confidently. And then he was like, do you mean Alan? Do you mean Alan Johannes? And I was like, do I? And he was like,
does he actually know him?
Yeah. And then he was like, I need to send you a picture of this man. And he's like, the manliest man you've ever seen in your entire life that I've been calling Elaine the whole time. So just to clarify, Alan Johannes is a man.
And just to clarify as well, it's because it's spelled A-L-A-I-N.
Yeah.
You're not just reading Alan wrong.
And then with Johannes being the surname, like I just thought it was like a foreign spelling of Elaine, you know?
Foreign spelling of Elaine.
Yeah.
Like, does any other country in the world call their children Elaine? Now that you think about it.
Well, I've known a couple of Elaines with different spellings of it.
But like foreign Elaines?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what people call themselves. Like, you sound Scandinavian with the surname Johannes.
It does. Maybe it's huge in Scandinavia.
I don't know. But anyway, Alan Johannes is a man. So here's a fun fact. Alan and the drummer from Eleven, Jack Irons, formed a band called Anthem, with a Y, A-N-T-H-Y-M, when they were teenagers. The other members of the band were Michael Balzari and Hillel Slovak. And then along with Jack, they joined another band with a singer called Anthony Kiedis. They formed the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What?
So this Michael Balzari guy is actually Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers and then Hillel Slovak. So Jack and Hillel continued the band with Alan for a while, but then ultimately disbanded Anthem, which they had changed their name to What Is This?
What is this?
But they left Anthem to focus on Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, fair play
then
to them.
Then Jack ended up leaving and rejoined Alan to form Eleven.
Okay. Were they waiting though?
Well, like, that guy Jack is a founding member of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but then he left to go back to be with Eleven.
Yeah, you think he's
raging. So, wouldn't you? I mean, I don't like Red Hot Chili Peppers, but they have some success. So, Brody was already signed to Sire Records since Coral Fang, but she negotiated herself out of the contract for Spinnerette. She blamed the state of the industry for why they wanted to release the album themselves. In August 2008, a blog was posted on Spinnerette's MySpace announcing that fans could now hear the first song, Volume Knights. Knights as in, like, the armor metal guys. And not as in the time of the day. From the upcoming album via their official website. In October 2008, through the newsletter sent out to mailing list subscribers and then later on the website, it was announced that Spinnerette was to perform several dates throughout October. Brody stated in an interview that there would be a different lineup when she tours for an album. She said, Spinnerette isn't a band. It's me and whichever musicians I want to work with at the time. Which is really strange.
That's a bit like...
What about poor Elaine? Alan! But then she later clarified that she was referring to the touring band and not the studio musicians. But like, that's also strange.
What? So like...
So like, we'll record an album, but then I'm going on tour without you and I'll just choose who I want to at the time.
Oh. Yeah. But then she tried to say, oh no, I meant you're coming... But it's the other fellas.
I don't know. It is. It's really strange.
Yeah.
I don't know what the crack is with that. Because at first I thought she was saying Spinnerette was just her. And then she'll just like get in whoever she wants at the time. But then I don't know. I really don't know. Strange though. So in December 2008, Spinnerette released their first EP entitled Ghetto Love digitally through their website and Top Spin Media. They were with Anthem Records, an independent Canadian label at the time. I tried to look up who that Canadian label represented and it's like, they really just release a lot of Rush albums. Like a lot. Like their whole catalogue is just like Rush. So the EP featured four main tracks as well as a teaser mix of Spinnerette material and the music video for Ghetto Love, which was directed by Liam Lynch. You may remember him from his hit single, United States of Whatever.
that song?
Because this is my United States of whatever.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah. He directed the music video for Gotta Love.
That is so random.
But what you probably didn't know was he actually, after he released that single, he became better known for directing music videos. And he directed music videos for Queens of the Stone Age, Eagles of Death Metal, Foo Fighters, and Tenacious D. He directed the music video for Tribute. And he went on to direct the movie, The Pick of Destiny.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm so happy he's not known for that song.
I don't know why, when I was reading, I was like, Liam Lynch, that's like an Irish name. I was like, who is this man? And yeah, that's who he is.
That's hilarious.
In June 2009, they released their self-titled and only full-length studio album through Anthem Records in the US and Hassler Records in the UK. It was produced by Alan herself, I wrote here, but I believe I meant himself, because Alan is a man. Before its release, the band made the entire album available on MySpace to listen to, and Ghetto Love and Distorting a Code from the EP are included on the album. It reached number 20 on the Billboard Top Heat Seekers chart and 41 on the Billboard Independent Albums chart. What did you think about this album?
I never listened to it before this. I really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah.
I really liked the single Ghetto Love, and that was in my head
a
lot throughout the week I was singing it. I'd never listened to it before either. But as a whole, I don't like the album. I feel it's very much a product of its time.
As a whole, I was like, this album is grand. But it was more those beginning songs I really liked that like hooked me in. Mm. And then the more I listened to it, I was like,
It's so like indie dance. But yeah. Like, it's so late 2000s.
Yes. Like, yeah. If you released it today, I don't think it would work.
It's like that time when we were having house parties. And like, I'm trying to think of something. Like, Pumped Up Kicks was a massive song. Yeah. And
The Foles.
Yeah, things like that. Songs like that were big, and that it has that same sound, that kind of indie dance thing. Yeah. But yeah, not for me.
I actually really don't like that song, Distorting a Code.
I don't even remember which one that is. In August 2009, they played Reading and Leeds Festival in the UK and then toured for most of the rest of the year. In 2010, the band won Best Pop Rock Album at the Independent Music Awards. So like, they were doing things. That's I remember funny. Hearing she had a new band and being kind of excited because I really liked Coral Fang. And then I just never bothered to try and listen to them.
Yeah, I knew she had a new band, but also I never heard anything about them.
Yeah.
You know that way.
But they were winning awards, so like, people liked them. Brody stopped using the Spinnerette moniker in 2010, and in August 2011 gave birth to her and Josh's second child, a son named Oren Ryder Hom. Oren. O-R-R-I-N.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's a choice. Cool middle name, though. Ryder.
Yeah. I think I'd start using my middle name.
What is it? Patricia?
No, I mean if it was Ryder. Oh! Bridget!
Yeah, same vibe. All Irish people have terrible middle names.
Welcome to Foundation of the Emo, hosted by Bridget and Danny.
Claire Bridget.
What's yours?
Maria.
Maria. Bridget Maria. And Maria.
Jesus.
Maria?
Yeah.
Who's Maria?
It's actually after Our Lady Mary, the Mother of God. But Maria sounded better with my first name than Mary did.
Oh yeah, because Danny's not your first name.
So in 2012, Brody posted on her Twitter account that she was in the studio recording and was working with Shirley Manson of Garbage on at least one track.
Ooh.
In November 2012, Brody announced on Twitter that she was working on a solo album featuring Alan Johannes and Michael Schumann of Queens of the Stone Age.
So Alan Johannes is everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, she's not really giving him any credit, is she?
He's like with her through this whole thing, and I thought it was like her and her girl bestie. But it's her and her guy bestie, which is just as fine. But like... The whole time, I was like, these girls are so close. I love that they work on all these projects together. In November 2013, she announced that she'd signed to Caroline Records, a division of Universal Music Group, with the intention of releasing her debut solo album in early 2014. In February 2014, she released the first single, Meet the Fetus, Oh the Joy, featuring backing vocals by Shirley Manson of Garbage and Emily Cocal of Warpaint from her debut solo album, Diploid Love. Her first solo album was released for digital download in April 2014 and then physically in May. The album was produced by Alan Johannes and Brody herself. The album also features guest appearances from Nick Valenci of The Strokes on guitar, Michael Schumann of Queens of the Stone Age on bass, and heavily features Alan Johannes on guitars, bass, piano, trumpet, mellotron, and slide guitars.
What is a mellotron?
I wish I knew.
Anyone out there knows what a mellotron is, let us know.
I wish I knew. Yeah, like Alan is... Doing bits. So Diploid Love received mostly positive reviews, with NME rating it 7 out of 10, while Rolling Stone rated it 4 out of 5 stars. The album debuted at number 33 on the UK Albums Chart and number 7 on the US Top Heatseekers Albums Chart. The second single from the album, Don't Mess With Me, was used in the soundtrack of the Square Enix game Life is Strange Before the Storm. Did you listen to this?
Yeah, wasn't a big fan, were you?
No.
No.
I kind of thought that it would go in a different direction again.
I kind of thought it would go back to more Distillers-y.
Yeah, I thought it would be punkier, like, especially when it's her.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's always been her the whole time.
Yeah.
But I thought it was way more Spinnerette than it was Distillers.
Yeah, I just wasn't feeling it.
Not at all. It was a bit more, like, experimental as well in times. So I was like, oh no.
A bit self-indulgent, one might say.
Rowdy supported Nine Inch Nails and Queens of the Stone Age on their Australia-New Zealand tour in March 2014 to promote the album. And then she just keeps disappearing for like chunks of time where like nothing happens. But in February 2016, so 2 years later, she gave birth to her third child, a son named Wolf Dylan Riesholm.
Uh-huh. Does Kylie Jenner know that there's already a wolf?
In January 2018, Dahl shared links from her Twitter account to a newly made Twitter account for the Distillers, as well as a previously established Instagram account for the band. So, like, they reinstated their Instagram and then made a new Twitter. And a teaser video was put up across all platforms confirming their return. Initially, it was believed that the four Twitter accounts that the Distillers Twitter was following would make up the 2018 lineup of the band. So it was Brody, Tony Bradley on guitar, Andy Granelli on drums, and former Spinnerette member Alan Johannes. I don't know why I called him that, because he's everywhere.
Poor old Alan!
But since then, the account removed Alan and subsequently added former bassist Ryan Sinn.
You can't get rid of Alan.
Well, apparently they can. Because now it's like, it's not the very first lineup, but it's like a really early lineup.
So did you think like the besties had broken up here?
I think by the time I was writing this, I knew Alan was a man. Hopefully. It was later announced that the band would perform their first official show in over 13 years at the Casbah in San Diego, California in late April 2018.
Rock the Casbah. Rock the Casbah.
On September 11th, 2018, the Distillers' official Instagram account announced the release of a new single available on iTunes. They announced a European UK tour, which was then postponed several times before ultimately being cancelled altogether last year, with Brody citing personal circumstances. I think it was postponed once. I was trying to find it online, and every time I was trying to search for it, it was just showing me different dates. I think it was postponed once, and then COVID happened, so then it was like postponed for like years, and then they were supposed to be like last year and didn't happen. And then they just were like, do you know what? It's never going to happen. Forget about it. But yeah, obviously a lot of people are angry because they've been waiting years and years and years for this. And they just got refunds. In April 2019, the band confirmed that they'd begun recording their fourth album and follow up to Coral Fang and announced they'd be entering the studio with English music producer Nick Launay.
Oh, yes.
So again, there's been nothing else about this album since 2019 when they said they were recording it.
How many years? 5 years?
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on there. But then the Distillers will supposedly be playing Coral Fang in full at When We Were Young this coming October.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are they on the... Oh.
That would be insane to see.
Yeah.
But like reading all this, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to do it though. Like, will they be there or are they going to cancel?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so now it gets a little bit spicier. So in 2019, after 14 years of marriage, Brody and Josh separated. Brody filed for legal separation in November 2019 and divorce a month later, citing his alcoholism and drug abuse. He attended rehab and the pair successfully co-parented for a while. However, during one of the handovers of the kids, Brody stated that he punched her car window, wouldn't let her close her door, called her a cunt, and said, "Hey Brody, fuck you forever." She said that he was angry because their teenage daughter Camille refused to go to his house. The other two boys are like younger, but Camille is like older and she's like, yeah, I just don't want to go to my dad's. And he got very angry.
Yeah, Brody.
So that same year, Brody filed for a restraining order against him, claiming that he showed up at her house and headbutted her so hard that she saw stars.
Do you know what? Headbutting is just, to me, like, I can't. Do you know when you see it in movies? Mm. I'm just like, why would anyone do that to someone else?
I just feel like it'd be so painful for yourself.
Yeah, I just can't. And like the noise of like skulls cracking, like, no.
Yeah, well, apparently he just headbutted her so hard. So she also claimed that he said, "I've been thinking about wanting to kill you. And if I killed you, no one would know because you'd be dead." Which, like, isn't very clever. I don't know what that statement is supposed to mean, really.
What does that mean? If I killed you, no one would know because you'd be dead.
I don't know. He later took out a protection order against her, alleging that she would show up at events to trigger a violation of the restraining order against him.
Would she?
I don't know. That's the whole situation, it's a lot of he said, she said kind of stuff. So. Yeah. I don't know. He got, like, he managed to get it because obviously not everyone gets granted it. So he must have had some kind of evidence or something. In 2021, restraining orders were filed by both of his sons through Brody. Oren was 10 and Wolf was 5 at the time. The children claimed that they were afraid that their father was going to hurt them, while Oren, the elder of the two, mentioned a time when his dad had grabbed him by the genitals. Other claims from Oren included Josh hitting him in the head, throwing things at him, flicking his ears, verbally taunting him, driving drunk with him and his brother in the car, and making threats about murdering Brody's partner. Wolf made similar claims and stated that he was scared to visit his father. The request for the restraining order was denied by the judge.
Oh.
Yeah. So Josh's attorney, Susan Weisner, said, Miss Dahl has previously brought these claims to the police, DCFS, and the presiding judge of the family law court, all of whom have declined to take any action based upon these spurious claims. What this says to me is that she's like really been trying. She's gone to the police about this. She's gone to different people.
Yeah.
This seems like a last resort of her trying to get a restraining order.
Yeah.
That says to me more that it's true, other than like, oh, she's been doing all these things and no one believes her. Like,
yeah.
She's trying to brag. But to me, I'm like, it sounds like she's really trying to do this. Like,
yeah. But then why did they say no?
I don't know. Insufficient evidence or whatever. Like,
yeah.
After this, Brody and Josh's daughter, Camille, who was 15 at the time, was granted a temporary restraining order against him. She made similar claims to her brothers and through a representative stated, my DVRO, so that's domestic violence restraining order, isn't fake and was not written by my mom. It's a means to an end. Everything in there is something I saw, experienced and heard and is 100% true. To deny that is to deny the human right of free speech. I wish I could have protected my brothers under it, but unfortunately the law says otherwise. And again, a lot of people are like, oh, Brody was like making the kids do this or whatever, but like, she's 15.
Yeah, she can do it herself. Like,
why is she like, go against your dad?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, earlier on we saw that she didn't want to go to her dad's house.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So she, I don't know how like the law works, and especially not in America and like these things, but her temporary restraining order, she tried to get it to cover her brothers as well, but that part got denied, but she got granted her restraining order.
So bizarre.
So I don't know what that's about, but... So 2 months after the restraining orders were filed, Brody was found guilty of willfully failing to hand over her five-year-old to Josh as part of an agreed custody deal. And her two older children were discovered to have not visited him of their own accord. Brody was sentenced to community service and a $1,000 fine. And all I can say is, if like this is true and he is like abusive and horrible, and your kid who like, okay, it's court agreed that my kid has to go and see her dad or something like that, If that kid is like crying and begging and being like, please, I don't want to go to my dad's, I'm so afraid, and the older siblings aren't going.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, but then they're punishing the parent who's trying to.
Yeah. But like, I wouldn't be forcing my child to go. I'd pay $1,000 like and do community service or whatever. So in November 2021, Josh filed a civil harassment restraining order against Brody's current boyfriend, Gunnar Fox, who Brody's been dating since the divorce in 2019. First of all, I don't like to make any comments on people's relationships, but she needs to just take a break from men, I would like to say, because she literally divorced Tim and got with Josh. And now, like, the same year she breaks up from that 14-year marriage, she has a new boyfriend. Like, just relax.
Yeah.
Little lads between the vag, you know what I mean?
Little sorry? Oh, what now?
Just take a break, is what I'm trying to say. But anyway... So Josh claimed that he was intentionally interfering in the relationship between Josh and his kids. So he blamed the boyfriend.
Was, like.
But again, yeah, if this stuff was true.
Yeah.
To be fair, I've seen like a lot of stuff online. Gunnar Fox, I thought he was a celebrity with his name like that, but he's actually a hat maker.
It's a hat maker?
A hat maker, yes.
He makes hats?
He makes hats.
What?
Yes.
He's like a fashion
designer. To be fair, like a lot of people online hate him. Like he gets a lot of hate. So I don't know if he's necessarily a nice person or a good person. I don't really know why people don't like him. But like, I could just imagine if you got into a relationship with someone and you're like, my kids are afraid of their dad. And like, there's a horrible relationship there. If you happen to get with someone who is like angry or like quick to temper or something like that, I could see them getting in trouble trying to protect your kids.
Yeah.
Not defending him. I'm just saying I can kind of see all the sides here. So in January 2022, Gunnar Fox detailed an alleged incident in a court filing which a judge granted him an emergency stay away order. Gunnar alleges that he was at an Apple store at the Oaks Mall in California on the afternoon of Christmas Eve when Josh is said to have approached him from behind. Gunnar alleges that Josh pressed his chest against his body and said, "I'm going to kill you, you fucking pussy." Gunnar claims that when he left the second floor shop after removing himself from the exchange, Josh was waiting for him outside. He then claimed Josh lunged at him, threatening to throw him over the balcony, and grabbed his right arm.
Ooh. Is there CCTV of this, surely?
That's a good question.
In an Apple store.
But they granted him a stay away order.
Ooh.
So they believed that.
Yeah.
In March 2023, however, a court granted Josh sole legal custody of their three children for nearly 2 years. Additionally, he shared a rare statement on the situation confirming that Brody's not allowed to contact the home family, including Josh, the three children and Josh's parents. So this is like, I started to learn this because I follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I started to see all these posts. I only started following her like a couple of years ago. But what I like about her is she doesn't post like a celebrity. She posts like a mom.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just like, here's a dorky picture of like my kids. Or she just like reshares reels and stuff that she thinks are funny.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like a normal account to follow. But then she started posting about her kids. And this is how I found out about this. Did you know about this?
Which?
That like she got them taken off her.
Yeah. No, sorry. So I kind of, when you said you were doing this episode, I was like, oh yeah, there is drama. And I was like, doesn't he have domestic abuse claims against her?
Yes. So in some of the stuff that I was reading, and I didn't like read it one side, like only her side of the story, but I only saw like in one article briefly, it said that he was kind of like in the court when they were fighting back and forth and she was saying he was abusive.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, she used to hit me sometimes. I don't think violence is right on either side. And I don't think a woman should be hitting a man either. I don't know if it's true or not, but he's like 75 foot tall and he's massive. And I could just imagine her like, lightly like hitting him on the chest and him being like, whatever.
Yeah.
I still don't think it's right, but I'm just like,
yeah.
He was like, she hit me too. And then he said something about, and she once threw her handbag at me. And I was like, it sounds toxic on both sides, but I'm also like, I don't think she's gonna like cause you any great physical harm with her handbag.
You never know. Depends what was in the handbag.
And it had a bowling ball in it.
But why did she get them taken off her then?
It seems like he has really good lawyers.
Okay.
And there was, I think it comes up in a few minutes, but something about like when the kids were getting the restraining orders, Gunnar forged her signature on something.
Ooh.
But she knew about it. Like,
why didn't she just sign it herself?
I don't know. It's something really weird like that, but she knew about it. And then they used that to like turn the whole case against her and Gunnar and said like they're toxic and they're like bad for the kids and everything.
Awkward.
I don't know if it's like one of those things. It's like she's in the shower and then he's like, you need to sign this thing. And she's like, just sign it. You know,
I
don't know. I'm trying to like make sense of why he would sign it and her in her knowledge. Yeah, but at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah.
So Josh's representatives also addressed past reports that his children had filed restraining orders against him. In both cases, they allege that Brody's boyfriend Gunnar had illegitimately filed the requests, once by forging Brody's signature and again by taking the minor to court without the presence of either one of her parents. I don't know what that's about. In August of 2022, Josh and his two sons were granted a restraining order against Gunnar lasting 5 years, adding that Gunnar's requests for a restraining order against Tom were denied by two separate courts. In July 2023, Brody shared her side of the story on Instagram. So this is what I read last year, and that's how I started to like follow the case kind of thing. But she said, February 2022, after an 8-day trial, I was granted a 3-year domestic violence restraining order. You didn't hear about it because I didn't go to the press. I didn't parade it around tooting it from some triumphant horn because it's been fucking terrifying and devastating. 3 weeks later, they took one of my kids. A month after that, under temporary guise, they took my other two. Textbook to a T. They built an Everest of lies with no evidence. Why? Why would they do that? Because money, greed, corruption, and winning at all costs is the name of the game. There are no valiant altruist lawyers in a $27 billion per year wheel and deal industry of kangaroo family court, a violent shim-sham washing machine scam. You're the lead actor in a hellish Shakespearean nightmare play. Shoved center stage, punished, pointed at, lied about, laughed at, ridiculed, shamed, berated, and made an example of because no one gave you the script, and the joke's on you. But they wrote the script, and you paid for it. This started years ago, long before my partner Gunnar was ever in my life. He's not to blame for any of it. I knew about my signature. Do not be fooled by the PR and the smoke and mirrors magic trick of don't look over here, look over there. Darvo textbook insanity, they're all the same. We all see you. My story is not unique and it is not rare. It's happening to protective mothers and some protective fathers everywhere. There are thousands of us, hundreds of thousands of us. Children are the collateral, everyday collateral. That they suffer will make your hair stand on end. Many protective parents have lost children forever in horrific, unconscionable ways. If you've never been held in the heart-pounding, hellish, vice-like grip of family court, and if you've never been accused of the quack, debunked, loony, and extremely dangerous claim of parental alienation with zero evidence, because there was none, please hold your tongue. You have no idea.
That just sounds like one of her songs where it's a lot of words that don't really
connect. It does make sense, but like, first of all, she does write really nicely sometimes, like some of the things she says. I'm like, you can tell she's a writer. I have like heard this before. I don't know where, like on TV shows and stuff, that like the family court and like that kind of stuff is so weird. They can like take your kids off you if you, if you know, over basically nothing.
Yeah.
Like if a lawyer says something against you.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier there for them to just take your kids. And they have those actual companies who will come and just take your kids off the street. Like you'll be walking up the street and they will just put your kids in a car and take them away. And apparently that's what happened to her.
What?
She was with her kids on the street and a car pulled up and they grabbed the kids.
Oh, stop. That's so traumatizing for the kids.
Yeah. Like how, like in what world is that the best option for the kids? Well, I have heard before that of like cases where people are trying to get their kids back and they'd done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And it's just fucked, like.
And then I've heard of cases where the kids definitely need to be taken off them, yet they aren't. And then something happens and the dad like kills all the kids or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. So she wrote like so many posts. So I just started taking like clips of like little snippets of them because I'd be here forever reading them all out. But a week later, she posted again and it was several posts. But she said, during the 8-day domestic violence trial, the court thoroughly examined and subsequently dismissed all allegations made against me. The court found these allegations to be lacking in credibility, largely due to the total absence of evidence, inconsistencies and falsehoods uncovered during certain witness testimonies. Struggling to talk now. She goes on to say that the co-parenting relationship was never successful and that the co-parenting therapist advised terminating all contact. And allegedly this was all pre her being with Gunnar. This was just when it was her and Josh like organizing these things. So she goes on to berate the journalist from Rolling Stone magazine, who she claimed wrote a one-sided article, picking and choosing the information printed to reflect well for one side. So Josh's side.
Yeah.
I couldn't read the full article because it was behind a paywall and I wasn't paying for it. But I did see a lot of press that were like printing his side and not really talking about her very much at all. So she also said, this is punishment for reporting what the children said, trying to protect. That doesn't make sense. I tried to make it stop for a year and a half until they refused to go. Testified, begged, pleaded, sobbed. What would you do? Everything, anything, I bet. I'm fucking broken. This has shattered me into a thousand pieces. For a long time, I couldn't get out of bed. I contemplated what the point of going on was. I've been filled with so much pain and fear for so long. She added, no one can sustain that state. No one should ever. I let it go. I released it. I found the ladder of light. Get the fuck up and fight for your life. For them, always.
Oh.
And like her Instagram now, she doesn't post, she posts stories and stuff. She doesn't post on the grid that much. All she posts is like, oh, it's like it's one of the kids' birthdays today. Like loads of my life, and just post loads of pictures of her with the kids.
Yeah.
And like, she just has so many lovely pictures with her children.
Oh.
It's so sad. And she's like, it's been 2 years since I saw Wolf or Oren or whatever.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Just hasn't seen them since then.
That's sad.
So sad. So she finished by saying, like, after the big slew of posts, she said, I look forward to the release of The Distiller's Prey in the future. So Prey is in P-R-E-Y, which I presume is the name of the new album.
Yeah.
And the two records I'm working on now. I send much love and strength to you all, except not the trolls. You can eat a bag of out-of-date crackers and fuck off. Brody. I thought that was funny.
Nice.
So, as I said, it's all like he said, she said, and I don't know what's the real story. Josh is not known for being the nicest man in the world.
Yeah, I'll bet.
There's a lot of stuff about him.
Yeah, I think I did know this. Some of it. He's always punching people and all, isn't he?
Yeah, so it kind of lines up when you think about like being in a relationship with him if he's like a quick-tempered man.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2004, he was arrested for assaulting Dwarves frontman Black Dahlia and Carl Doyle at the Dragonfly Club in Los Angeles. Pleading no contest, he was ordered to remain at least 100 yards away from Dahlia and the club, sentenced to 3 years probation with community service and forced to enter a rehab program for 60 days.
Yeah, he is into the alcohol, isn't he?
Mm. In June 2008, at the Norwegian Wood Festival in Oslo, Josh drew criticism for his reaction to an audience member who threw a shoe at him. He called the audience member a chicken shit fucking F-word, the derogatory word for a gay person. And a 12-year-old dickless fucking turd. He was accused of homophobia and in response attempted to apologize and appear pro-gay by saying he also called the guy a pussy and threatened to have anal sex with him.
I'm trying to, struggling here now to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, okay.
Apparently he has a gay brother. Which he's also using as like,
fair play to him.
I couldn't be a homophobe because my brother's gay. I know a black man, so I'm not a racist. And then in December 2017, so like the first incident was 2004, then 2008. Now 2017, there's another incident. So like this is, you know, This is how he is as a person. Yeah. This is spanning over a lifetime.
Yeah.
So he was captured on video kicking the camera of Shutterstock photographer Chelsea Lauren into her face during KOROQ's Almost Acoustic Christmas concert in Los Angeles. In a statement, Josh claimed that he had been kicking over lighting equipment and was unaware that he'd kicked Lauren until he was informed of it the next day.
Well, you shouldn't be kicking over lighting equipment.
Well, yeah, it's dangerous. Like, Lauren disputed this, stating that he had made eye contact with her before kicking her. Josh later issued a video response in which he admitted to kicking Lauren and apologised to her.
Fair play. Fair play to him. He just sounds like a not nice person.
He's just not a nice man. And it's sad because I actually have a Queens of Stone Age t-shirt that I really like.
I kind of fancied him when I was younger.
Oh, he's very ginger.
Yeah. Some of those weird ones.
I just tend to, like, I know because I'm a big feminist bitch that, like, I'm always on the side of the woman. But, like, I just feel like perhaps.
I mean, we can't, like... We don't know if it's true, basically.
I don't know what's true and what's not true. I feel like he has form. I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if he's not a very nice person.
If you had to pick someone whose story, if you could only pick one of them and be like, their story seems more likely based on previous carryings on, you would assume Brody is telling the truth.
Yeah, I do. I just think... Like, it sounds to me like she was trying to get her kids away from him.
But then why did they take them off her? Like,
because of the forged signings, apparently. That is what it was all based on.
Can't be, surely.
Well, he lives with her. So a lot of the argument was like they're kind of counting them as one entity, Gunnar and Brody.
Yeah, yeah.
And that if he's, like, meddling in the custody agreement and if he's signing things, they're like, that's dangerous. Like, I think that Josh has, like, really good lawyers because obviously he's minted.
But would the kids at this stage not be old enough to make their own choices?
I think they're all still under 18, so. Mm. I don't know what age Camille is now. I feel like 16, 17, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But the boys are definitely younger, so.
That's sad.
It is very sad. Anyway, what song do you like?
It's an obvious one. You know I go for the obvious ones.
What's your song?
It's not Drain the Blood.
Drain the Blood.
It's City of Angels.
That's a bop. Yeah. That's an absolute bop.
What's yours?
Mine is Beat Your Heart Out.
Okay, yeah.
That is such a bop.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually a really hard choice, to be fair, because I wanted, I was like, I'll choose this one. Then I was like, no, I really like this one. Then I was like, no, I like this one. But yeah, Beat Your Heart Out is a bop every time you put it on.
Yeah, it is, to be fair. That whole album, really.
Yeah. And what is your song, Skip?
That one I mentioned earlier, his name has now eluded me.
Distorted
it's been a red
the
one.
Code.
Yeah. It's just weird. It just doesn't come together or something. It's one of those songs you're like waiting for something to happen and never does.
I did not enjoy like the Spinneret or the solo album, but my song to skip is actually of Coral Fang. It's Death Sex.
Which one's that?
The very last song. It's like 12 minutes long.
Oh, yeah. Well, That's fair enough.
Actually, I don't mind that part. It's when it just starts, like, just making distorted noises for, like, 9 minutes. There's just no need. I did skip it. Like, I was like, I can't listen to this. And I went back and listened to Coral Fang so many times, but every time I came to that, I was like, nope. Then I was like, that is my song to skip, because I have skipped it.
They shouldn't have put it the very last bit of the album. It's so easy to skip.
Well, yeah. I was like, it was actually good, because I could just skip it. But yeah. So what band are you doing next time?
Okay. I've contemplated doing this band for a little while, but I just didn't want to. I was like, oh, I don't want to listen to them. So I feel they're a band that maybe came just after our emo-ness.
Okay.
So like we were probably that bit older. So we probably missed the boat on them, if you know what I mean. But I would say if you'd ask a lot of younger emos, they'd be like, these are one of the top emo bands. Do you know what I'm going to pick?
Maybe. Yeah. There's a few people in my head. Yeah. There are a few bands.
I'm going to do... Somebody actually requested it before.
Yeah.
Pierce the Veil.
That was my first guess.
Yeah.
Never listened to them in my life.
I have listened to them, so there's one album there that I've already listened to. They've only 5 albums.
That's okay.
It's not so bad.
Because I'm going to be in Disneyland next week, so I can't be listening to anything.
That's okay. But yeah, I think there's the usual stories that come out about them, but I think they're a good one to do because they're a bit more current.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, them and Sleeping With Sirens are the same band.
Yeah.
And there's another band as well.
Mayday Parade?
I don't know. There's another band that I think are the same as well. That all three of them are the same band in my head.
Oh, I thought all three of them were the same, yeah.
Well, let's find out if they're any different, seeing as I've already listened to Sleeping With Sirens. So
yeah, exactly, yeah.
We'll see if there's a difference between them.
And Callum Quinn does sing with them on some
songs.
Of
course he does.
Yeah,
of course he does. I'm surprised he's never sung with the Distillers.
That would be weird.
Maybe on the new album, Pray.
Who knows? We shall see.
Interesting.
So go listen to us on YouTube, guys.
Yes, listen to us on YouTube. Tell us if that's a thing. Does that exist? Why did we do that? I don't know. Also follow us on social media. We do make little videos, not for YouTube, but for Instagram and TikTok.
We make memes using Taylor Swift lyrics.
Yeah, we blew up for that. We went viral. It was insane. Paparazzi were at the door and everything. Like 20 people shared it and I thought we were famous. Follow us on social media. We're Foundations of Emo on Instagram and TikTok, and we're Foundations Emo on X, which we don't really use. And yeah, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Okay, bye.